Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's EcoLogic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today I'm joined by Janice Lynn. She's the founder and the chief executive officer of Stratagen, a consulting firm based in Sacramento, California. Janice is considered a clean energy change maker and visionary. I'm delighted to have her on the podcast today. Hi, Janice. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Doing great. Good morning, Ted.
Where are you as we speak?
I am sitting in my home office in Berkeley, California.
You're in Berkeley. And then Stratagen, you have an office in Sacramento. Are you commuting back and forth quite a bit? Or?
You know, actually, our office in Sacramento is virtual. Originally, our headquarters was in Berkeley, but during the pandemic, we took a survey and nobody wanted an office anymore. So we have staff literally scattered all over the place, from Greece to Mexico, all over the United States.
Well, you've got these great projects we're going to talk a lot about, but what are you working on this week? What's hot on your to-do list this week?
Well, I've been spending a lot of time on green hydrogen, one of my favorite topics in clean energy. And just this week, I've been working on constructing and finalizing our program for our annual conference, Catalyst H2, which is a green hydrogen conference that's intended to accelerate progress for a clean and just transition, and really help stakeholders understand and incorporate the incredible role of green hydrogen to help us end our dependency on fossil fuels.
Well, that's fantastic. And I think you told me that's coming up in December. Is that right?
So yes, it's December 4th through 6th at the Hotel Maya in Long Beach.
And so here we are in May, and you're nailing down the program at this point and buttoning up all the details?
Not completely finalizing it. I mean, it's still 6 months away. So I have a vision for what the show will do. I have a vision for how I want people to feel at this conference. But of course, a lot can happen between now and December. So we always leave room for flexibility to accommodate the latest and greatest developments.
Now, I'm jumping ahead, but as I understand it, you've got Stratagen, which is your consulting firm, and then the Green Hydrogen Coalition that you have founded and manage is a nonprofit. Is that right? And so you balance these two aspects of your life?
Yes, I wear multiple hats. So I am the founder of Stratagen. We're a mission-driven consulting firm that specializes in accelerating the clean energy transition. And we really specialize in market development, sort of that intersection of how do you create a business model, a bankable value proposition? How do you innovate in the regulatory landscape? Very important in the energy sector. How do you model alternative future outcomes? And finally, how do you bring stakeholders together in a co-creative, constructive way so you can actually achieve progress? So that's what Stratagen is all about. Additionally, over the years, I founded the company in 2005. We have successfully launched and run three nonprofits. The first was the California Energy Storage Alliance. I think it might have been in that capacity that we first met.
I served as
the part-time executive director for more than a decade. Then we launched the Vehicle Grid Integration Council, which represents EVs, mostly, car manufacturers, charging companies, to represent electric vehicles as a strategic grid resource. And almost 4 years ago now, I started the Green Hydrogen Coalition, which is an educational nonprofit. Surprise, surprise, whose mission is to accelerate a clean and just energy transition economy-wide, because that's the power of that little green hydrogen molecule.
It's really great. And this is, I take it, this speaks to who you are. I mean, you've got the business side, clearly, and then you've got the educational side. Is that, I mean, they're linked together, probably.
Yeah. it's really true. I was reflecting on this the other day with a friend, and you know, what I do is sort of a culmination of everything I've done in my professional life. It's this interesting mashup of strategy consulting, convening stakeholders and events with innovation, business innovation, market innovation, policy and regulatory innovation. Most days I feel extremely lucky to be doing what I'm doing because
Yeah.
I just couldn't imagine a more fun job every day.
And I did visit your website, and I just the way you frame things up, Janice, is really I love the way it's written, and I love this notion of bankable business model development. That we're in this clean energy transition. We're accelerating. That's our passion, is accelerating the transition, avoiding the climate crisis as best we can. But not just business model development, but bankable ones, th things that are going to really be practical.
Yeah, and what we do is we bring a lot of creativity to the task. I think a lot of times innovation, especially in energy, is all about driving down cost, which is very important. And we, of course, especially for hydrogen, that is super duper important. And there's lots of ways to do that by scaling. We can talk a couple hours about just that topic. What we love to explore and innovate on is the benefit side of the equation. Because remember, bankability is, and a value proposition is the difference between costs and benefits. And there are many, many creative things you can do on that side of the equation. I think the evolution of energy storage in the power sector is a great example of how innovation in the regulatory and policy side enabled access to those benefits and a new way of planning and implementing our electric infrastructure. I think the same opportunity exists for green hydrogen.
Let's go all the way back just for a couple minutes, for the sake of our audience. Where did you grow up, Janice? Where was home?
I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and when I was in middle school, my family moved to Taipei. So I spent some years in Taipei and ultimately graduated high school there and then came back to Philadelphia for college.
Yeah, you did. You went to UPenn, and it looks like you got a BA and a BS. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I was completely undecided of what to do. And having recently lived in Taiwan, I thought, oh, maybe international business is my thing. And so I got a dual degree in economics. From the business school and international relations from the arts and sciences school. And upon graduation, I immediately went into strategy consulting in New York City.
And that was that Booz Allen?
Yes, it was 40th and Park Avenue.
Yeah. That's my hometown, by the way, New
Oh,
York.
really? I didn't know you
How
were
did
from
so
here.
you mentioned the part of your youth growing up in Taipei. What were you into there? I mean, you mentioned international relations, but what as a kid, where did you think you were going to be? Did you have any idea what kind of a career you were going to have?
Well, I'll share that my objective as a young person was to be independent and to do my own thing, largely because I grew up in a family that was very Confucian. There are rules for my brothers and rules for me. And the rules for the youngest child, who was also a girl, in my view, were very fair. So my primary MO as a young person was get out there, get a job, be independent. I didn't discover the mission-driven aspect of my purpose until much later in life. So for the first part of my career, I was a generalist, first working for very large companies through Booz Allen. I loved the thrill of very tough, solving very tough problems. And then I found my way into venture capital. Also, as a generalist, different set of problems. And I said, wow, these young companies and startups, this is really exciting. I love this. And it took the first dot-com bubble burst to really make me reevaluate, is this what I really want to do? And I'll share with you the moment. I remember this moment clearly. It was in 1999. A lot of these venture funded dot coms were falling over all over the place. At the time, I was co-founding a software startup, and I just had this epiphany moment that this work is not feeding my soul. This is not what I love. It's not bringing any good at all into the world, and I need to change up the whole enterprise. If I'm going to spend this much time working on something, it has to do some good in the world. And I've always been an outdoorsy person, so it's either going to be in renewable energy or garbage recycling. Of course, I had zero experience in either one of those fields. And as luck would have it, there was a solar energy company 2 miles from my house that had an opening. That's how I got into clean energy
So
and best decision I ever made.
along the way you so that was Power Light, but along the way you picked up an MBA. Was that before Power Light?
It was before, yes.
Okay. And that was at Stanford. And then that I take it that's what moved you to California, was your graduate school.
Actually, I came to California before graduate school to work at a VC firm. And so before and during business school, I was like really deep into the tech world. I was the chair of the MIT Stanford Venture Lab. And the moment I had this epiphany and decided to get into solar energy, this was really early. This was in 1999. I had this big, big shot board of venture capitalists that on the board of it was called VLab, the MIT. I think it still exists, Stanford Venture Lab. And every single one of them called me up and they were like, "Janice, what are you doing? Why are you getting into solar?" To realize that is such a fringy thing, and you're giving up your career in tech. And I just had all my rationale. I'm like, "Guys, you don't understand. Distributed energy is the way to go. We can make electricity from sun."
Well, you had that, and I guess you've always been a little bit ahead. You've been ahead on the solar, you've been ahead on the storage, you've been ahead on the green hydrogen, which we're going to get into. But that and what was the those early days at Power Light? Pretty exciting, right? Lots
Oh,
going
it
on.
was so much fun. I joined Power Light and I said, "Wow, this is so great." First of all, people in solar are like super nice and super fun. I just love the people and the mission. And this was at a time when I think when I joined the solar industry, solar was like $5 or $6 a watt,
I was going to
a
say at least
panel.
four, right?
Yeah, it was really expensive. And then about 2 months after I joined, we had the energy crisis. It was quite a ride. But I never, I mean, I always tell people that solar is my first love. And yeah, so anyway, it's funny because all these big shot venture capitalists were telling me, "Oh, you're making such a big mistake." And then within a few years, they were all, investing in hydrogen. I'm sorry, in solar. And then when I got into then I started Stratagen, and our second client was a vanadium redox flow battery. So I got started working on energy storage, and I said, "Wow, this is the future, because we're going to have all this cheap solar and wind and all these renewables, and we're going to have to store it."
Now,
And I started.
was that Avalon batteries at the time, or who was that?
Was VRB Power Systems. They don't exist anymore. But Avalon is, whenever one company goes away, the people disperse. And Avalon, I would say, is maybe a, there are people from
That
the
company.
original VRB.
And now Avalon is
Everybody from Avalon.
Invinity. Now Avalon is Invinity, and they just did a really big deal with the California Energy Commission. I don't know if you heard about it. Biggest.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And I love going to storage and solar conferences. It's a little like a family reunion.
That's right.
Yeah, anyway, when I got into storage, it was the same thing. Everybody's like, "Why are you doing this? It's so crazy." And then a few years later, it's kind of the thing. And I'm so proud of the work that we did in the early days on storage, because I think we were able to work with some amazing leaders that truly cracked open the market for storage in the power sector and change the way we think about and plan for the grid. It's
Who were some of
it is a
those,
game changer.
Janice? I mean, I saw you one of the videos. I saw Ron Nichols, my friend Ron Nichols, on there. Who were some of the
Yes.
other? Who were some of the other people that you think of that were had that vision to make it punch storage
Oh,
into reality?
well, the first was then Attorney General Jerry Brown and his staff. There's quite a few people I worked with there that I'll tell you, that's a really funny story because I had already started the California Energy Storage Alliance, and we got a call from the Attorney General's office. I remember taking the call and I'm like, oh, okay. Can I call you back? Hung up. I called my co-founder, Don Liddell, who is a regulatory attorney, and I said, Don, the AG's office just called me. What should I do? And he said, don't call them back. We need to think about it. Can't have anything. Okay, Janice, you can call them back. And they were reaching out about storage because Jerry Brown and his staff understood that as we would achieve more and more renewables penetration, we would have a mismatch, right? We were going to have to match production and demand. And they wanted to talk to us about storage policy and storage legislation. And that is how Assembly Bill 2514 came about. So Jerry Brown was a sponsor. We were the lead advocate, and sent at that time Assembly member Nancy Skinner was the author.
Oh, that's
And
great.
she is my Assembly member and now Senator here in Berkeley.
Wow, how great. How
There's
great.
a whole string there of people. We could have a whole podcast on the amazing people that made the storage industry happen for the power sector. It's been quite a fun ride.
Yeah, now I was just reading that we're up to about 4 gigawatts of storage in California. We have a state goal of 48 gigawatts. I guess, I
Yeah.
think of the state as being about a 50 gigawatt power system, and we want to have about 48 gigawatts of storage, I guess 4 hour or 6 hour, whatever it's going to be. But we're really on a trajectory to make the renewables, I call it the renewables revolution, possible through storage, right?
Yeah, it's just amazing. I'm so proud of California, and it's happening all over the world too. But anyway, it was actually through storage that I got interested in green hydrogen. It was in 2016 we asked a very, maybe 2015, a very simple question, which was, what kind of storage are we going to need when we achieve 80, 90, and 100% renewables in the power sector? We did a little analysis. A really simple, quick one, where we took the CAISO OASIS data and we took all the wind and solar at the margin and just amped it up so that in aggregate over the course of the year, supply of wind and solar would equal aggregate demand. And then we plotted the results on a daily basis and looked at the graph. And in about 5 seconds, came to the conclusion that we were going to need some serious storage. We were going to need multi-day, weekly, monthly, and ultimately seasonal storage. And so, wow, our portfolio that we have today cannot provide this service. What else can? And I started looking around, and about a week later, discovered that hydrogen and green hydrogen was making huge all over the world. And I was familiar with hydrogen and California's tremendous progress with fueling stations, but this was like big scale hydrogen and that it can be produced at much lower cost than I originally thought. And that every part of the value chain needed to achieve this kind of seasonal storage existed today commercially. I said, wow, we can do that. We can decarbonize everything. And that's why I started the GHC, the Green Hydrogen Coalition.
And that's a great story.
And sure enough, just like the other 2 times, Yeah, a bunch of people pulled me aside and they said, Janice, what are you doing? This is so crazy. You shouldn't talk about this out loud. It's gonna, affect your reputation. Same thing over and over again.
Well, I'm glad you pursued it. When I think about storage, I'm with you. You know, the batteries and lithium ion is really good for 2 hour storage, 4 hour storage. But like you're saying, we ultimately need to have seasonal storage. And I was quite attracted. I actually met Bill Gross, I think, at one of your conferences, same conference in Pasadena, who was the Idea Lab, and he was talking all about the Energy Vault model and the gravity-based storage systems that I think are just so phenomenal. What's your read on that? Is that sort of more of a niche market, and then the green hydrogen you see as being a more ubiquitous sort of technology?
We need all of the above, right?
Yeah.
The power sector, the energy sector is vast, and there's a role for every technology. There's a role for short duration storage, medium-term storage, fast responding storage, long duration storage, seasonal multi-day green hydrogen storage. There's also a role for electrification, electric vehicles, fuel cell electric vehicles. The way I see it is we need all of the above to combat and accelerate our transition away from fossil fuels. And it kind of makes me sad sometimes when I see folks on the clean energy technology side fighting with each other.
Yeah.
Because it's like this argumentation is wasted effort. It should be all of us together versus diesel, right? That's the goal.
Yeah, I find that also in the consulting world. I'm very disappointed when green consultants, I consider my company one of them, are competing with other green consultants. And there's so much work that needs to be done. Everybody should be out there supporting one another and like you said, not competing. But on the green hydrogen, everybody's asking the same question. How soon will green hydrogen be cost effective? And I mean, you must be tracking the trajectory of the cost drop. What do you think?
Actually, we've been studying this question for 3 years, and not only when is it going to happen, but how to make it happen, how to make it happen faster. I'd encourage you to check out our website at the Green Hydrogen Coalition because a few months ago we published 3 years of work architecting a green hydrogen economy for Southern California. It's called High Build Los Angeles. And what we found, and I'll share with you in the next few minutes, some of our key findings. Finding number one, at scale, we can achieve delivered green hydrogen like right into the Port of LA at the pipeline. Under a dollar a kilogram. That's really exciting because a kilogram of hydrogen has the equivalent energy content as a gallon of diesel. To achieve that, it requires scale, it requires mass scale production, it requires pipeline transport and connection to geologic storage. And the reason you need all those components is you have to go big scale, and the storage helps you balance seasonal demand. It's the same reason why we have underground geologic storage of natural gas. Those are all very encouraging findings. We think all of this can be achieved by 2030 for a place like Los Angeles.
Janice, let me hold. Just let me interrupt you for a second here.
Okay.
That's incredibly encouraging. But let's talk about what is a kilogram of regular hydrogen cost, or gray hydrogen, or brown hydrogen, or what is that? I thought that was around $1.50 a kilogram, and I thought green hydrogen right now is around $5 a kilogram. Am I?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah,
Okay.
that's about right.
But so you're saying that by 2030, if we had all of these elements of scale for LA, that we could come in under the cost of conventional hydrogen with green hydrogen by 2030.
100%.
That's a great finding.
It is a great finding. And, our view is finding ways to accelerate this vision is worth everyone's effort because it creates an economic value proposition for fuel switching. If we can solve for an alternative zero carbon fuel, in our view, history will just kind of take care of itself. right? Economic forces will prevail. So this is very exciting news. And, you know, there are skeptics who say this is going to take a really long time. I tend to be an optimist and think about, again, the ways that you can work on the value side of the equation, create alignment, build champions, because this is a vision that's worth fighting for.
And it is a vision that flies in the face of a lot of the sort of the buzz in the industry, which is all the decarbonization, building decarbonization through electrification, and swapping out boilers and swapping out and just going over to heat pumps. But now, and I know that there's a headlong search to get rid of natural gas in our homes, and just chefs are upset about their cook stoves and everything. But green hydrogen is another option, right?
Yeah, well, please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I think that there is a role for all of the above. We support electrification. Again, the name of the game is speed. You know, if you're looking around and we don't have a lot of time to make a difference here. There is a role for electrification. There is a role for, we need to go as fast as possible on all fronts. And hydrogen is certainly for hard to abate sectors, one of the only solutions that may be possible. I used to tell people the reason I got into green hydrogen is that I wanted my kids to be able to someday, I don't know, fly home to Taiwan or Sydney, Australia, Singapore on a zero carbon flight.
Yeah.
And at that time, people would say, Janice, don't say that out loud. No one's going to take you seriously. Well, I'm here to tell you that that's happening. I mean, look at what Airbus is doing.
Yep.
There are several startups that have already demonstrated fuel cell flight. Airbus is not only developing fuel cell powered airplanes, but is looking into combustion and turbines. I mean, there's so much innovation. This is absolutely going to happen. And, you know, certain airlines are already using sustainable aviation fuel produced with green hydrogen.
And I like what you said about green hydrogen being applied in those sectors. You put it more eloquently than I can remember, but the hardest to reach sectors or the hardest to convert mm-hmm. sectors, and perhaps aviation is one of those.
Oh, yeah. You know, others include maritime shipping, heavy duty trucking, clean, firm, dispatchable power for multi-day dispatch in the power sector, right? We need that in the power sector to balance the grid. And right now, the best solution is to combust natural gas. So if you believe in a future that has less reliance on fossil fuels, green hydrogen has to be in it. And can I say something about what I mean when I say green hydrogen? Because there's a lot of confusion about that.
Sure.
The Green Hydrogen Coalition absolutely supports a carbon intensity framework. There are many ways to produce green hydrogen. We think of green hydrogen as any pathway that does not involve fossil fuels and has climate integrity. So as you know, hydrogen is a very abundant little molecule. It exists in the universe, often bonded to other things. So you have to produce it. It's an industry that's been around for a very, very long time. Hydrogen, gray hydrogen, is an industrial commodity that's produced at scale, traded, it's moved around in pipelines, it's stored underground already. It's commercial. It's very commercial, very mature, but it's mostly made from fossil fuels. And we can use a lot of that same infrastructure and produce some new, it's important to make a whole bunch more. But instead of producing the hydrogen from fossil fuels, we can make it from renewable resources. Most people are familiar with water as a feedstock. You can use renewable electricity, split the water, you get hydrogen, oxygen. Organic waste is another great source for the production of hydrogen. Biogas. Actually, you know, truth be told, I think the waste streams that humans make create all kinds of problems on the planet. And there are pathways and tremendous innovation underway to repurpose those waste streams, solve a problem in that sector, and use it as a feedstock to make a very usable, very valuable zero carbon fuel. But you have to do it responsibly. And that's why I love hydrogen so much, because remember how I got started way back when? It was either renewable energy or garbage. And coming back full circle and getting to work on both.
Oh, great. Hey, listen, we're at time here, and you and I could talk for a lot longer. We'll have to do another session, another podcast together, because you're speaking my language and you're speaking truth, and I just love the way the logic that you spew forth. But I do want to ask you one question before I let you go. You got so much going on in your life. Obviously, you mentioned kids also. How do you balance everything? You look like you're healthy, you look relaxed. What's the secret?
Mindfulness, time is precious, and that's our most precious commodity. And so my philosophy on life is to make every minute count, whether I'm working with family, with friends. It's so important to spend every day and have no regret. And so one thing I have to really watch is I love my work so much, is like I could spend all my time doing that. So an intentionality to specifically not do that. That's the thing I think about every day.
That mindfulness. Janice, thanks so much for your time today. How great.
Thanks, Ted. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Have a great day.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.